Now, I don't know if everybody can see this icon here. I'm just going to lift it up. This icon greets me and the rest of my family, too, every morning as we come down the stairs. It also greets any visitors to our home because of the way our house is shaped. She is the Syrophoenician woman, an icon written by Brother Robert Lentz. Now, the Syrophoenician woman is the identity... Hold on. Is the identity that Mark gives to the woman that Matthew identifies as being from Canaan, and whose story we hear this morning. Now, I am sure that there is much hay to be made in the distinction between the two gospel writers choosing to call her Syrophoenician or Canaanite, but quite frankly, I don't care. They are clearly the same woman, and I refuse to be distracted by that point. The important things about her are consistent across the two stories, and they are the reason why I want her in my home, and why I think her story is an amazing gift to Gwendolyn on this, the day of her baptism. First of all, she is an outsider to Jesus' community, but she doesn't let being an outsider stop her. She is brave and bold, demanding attention and care from someone she has no real reason to expect will give it to her. And so she is willing to go toe-to-toe with Jesus himself. And she does it not only because she is in great need, but also because she is sure of her own worth and that of her daughter. She knows that they are deserving of attention and care, even if those with the power to give it don't see it. And she is a teacher, one of the great teachers of our faith. Her clarity of vision, her depth of faith in God is such that even Jesus has something to learn from her. And so some mornings, the blessing this holy woman gives me is the challenge to be like her. To stand up for people on the outside of the circle, which might sometimes, although due to the accidents of my birth, perhaps not that often, but might sometimes mean me. To challenge, in fact, the very idea of outside and inside, to demand justice and compassion, even when there is little reason to expect that my demands will be met, grounding myself in faith in God's all-encompassing goodness. Some mornings, though, most mornings, probably, the blessing she gives me is the challenge to be like Jesus. As he ends up in this story, not as he begins it. Because let's be honest, he doesn't begin very well. He begins with an attempt to ignore a disruptive and desperate woman, a strategy that is probably pretty familiar to many of us. It is, after all, very easy to close our eyes and ears to people outside of our circle. To turn off the TV, or hurry past the unsettling person on the street, or extract ourselves from awkward conversations with social niceties. This woman, however, persists. And we don't know how many times she shouts out, but it seems to have been quite a few, because finally the disciples are fed up, and they tell Jesus to make her go away. And that he doesn't do it is a sign of hope, I think, emboldening her, perhaps, to fall at her knees at his feet. But then he calls her and her daughter dogs and denies them a place at God's family table. Now, people have worked very hard through the millennial to explain this exchange away, to save Jesus from his own bad behavior and preserve the idea for us that Jesus is simply too nice to make such a mistake. The explanations, though, I'm afraid, are weak. And they reveal much more about the people and the church that has made them than they do about Jesus. And they diminish the power of this story and the woman at its heart to teach and transform. And so I invite you to take the story at face value and see where it can take us. Jesus has just insulted a woman who has come to him for help and claimed that his care and attention is reserved for his own people, the people of Israel. And the smallness of this vision is thrown back at him by a woman who is able to see abundance where he claims there is scarcity. A woman who is able to see relationship where he sees difference. And yet, she insists, the dogs eat the crumbs from the master's table. And thanks be to God and to this brave woman, Jesus is able to receive this challenge and be stretched by it, rather than rejecting it as so many others would, as so many others have. Jesus was willing to really listen to her, to really see her, something he does over and over again in the Gospels. Looking at her, he saw her. And so he saw her faith and her vision, and his own grew in response. And before you accuse me of heresy, let me remind you that in the Gospel according to Luke, the young Jesus is described as growing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and people. And I trust that you all know growing in wisdom and stature does not come to an end when you turn 30. This is the Jesus the Canaanite woman calls me to follow, to be a person open to challenge and change and growth, perhaps especially when that comes from unexpected people and uncomfortable encounters. For really, these two challenges, these two blessings, are two sides of the same coin working together for God's people. The strength to demand inclusion, whether for ourselves or for others, and the openness to be changed by those seeking inclusion. Both of these blessings lead us deeper into God's vision of the world, and opportunities to embrace them in small ways and big ways abound. You can do it in the schoolyard, or the work lunchroom, or the church coffee hour. Wherever there are likely to be people on the edges looking in, wondering if there is room for them, contenting themselves with crumbs of social connection, but hungry for real relationship. You can do it by reading books, watching movies, taking classes that come from places and people outside the circles of power and influence, opening yourself up to the discomfort of learning unpleasant truths and the challenge of living in new ways as a result. You can do it by joining in the Pride Parade, in Truth and Reconciliation Day, in the decade of celebration of peoples of African descent. Very concretely and rather urgently at this time, you can do it by advocating for Belong Ottawa at Center 454, a place that seeks to provide care to people who may not have homes or jobs, but who reside in that neighborhood, while the city is pressured by the housed and employed residents to withdraw that care in the hopes of pushing those who need it out of the community. And you can do it simply by sharing your own story, claiming your own place at the table, even when you are unsure of your welcome, and by actively making room for others to share theirs. Now, of course, the fact that there are lots of opportunities to receive the blessing of the Canaanite woman also means lots of opportunities to dodge it, to choose instead a narrower view of who belongs and who doesn't, to imagine that God is as small as we are, and that there is only enough for those who are already gathered at the table. And this choice is tempting sometimes. It's easier, and it feels safer, avoiding the risk of further rejection, avoiding the discomfort of difference. But easier and safer is not really God's plan for us. The Canaanite woman knew this. She knew that true safety was found in trusting God's goodness, not the false boundaries that we create. She knew that God's plan is one of abundance and bravery and boldness, calling us to make room for all of God's children at the table in the knowledge that there is healing and hope for all. And so let us give thanks for our sister, the Canaanite woman, and let us be strengthened by her blessing this morning and every morning hereafter. And now we have the very great joy of welcoming Gwen to the table through the sacrament of baptism, an outward sign of her truest identity as a beloved child of God, and making her now and always an equal member of the body of Christ and a student of our Canaanite sister.